It's to the best of our knowledge. I'm Anne Strangeamps. Some of us have been having trouble reading lately. It's like the pleasure, the magic, is gone. Writer Catherine Rundell has a solution.
COVID-19 variants spread across the U.S.
We're in the middle of a global pandemic, and I think you should be reading children's books right now. Children's books are books that traffic in hope and in possibility. They're books which give you a sense of the world as being colossal. Children's books say to you, hope matters, love matters. Children's books will not ever pontificate or self-congratulate because children will not wait while they do so. Children's books have to be a distillation. They are a distillation of our most vulnerable heart, of our hopes and of our dreams. They're a kind of literary vodka. And right now, in the middle of a pandemic, I think we have never needed literary vodka more.
Remember what it felt like when a book could sweep you away in the very first sentence? Catherine Rundell writes books like that, adventure stories for children. She's also a literary scholar at All Souls College, Oxford, and she believes that no matter how old and wise you think you are, you should be reading children's books. And I totally agree.
So I write adventure stories, often unlikely adventure stories, where children are sent on wild quests. And so Rooftoppers is about a girl who discovers that her mother, who she thought had drowned in a shipwreck, might in fact be in Paris. And so she discovers a gang of children who live up on the rooftops of Paris, this wild secret life, and they shoot pigeons with bows and arrows and leap from rooftop to rooftop. So this is just the opening of it. On the morning of its first birthday, a baby was found floating in a cello case in the middle of the English Channel. It was the only living thing for miles, just the baby and some dining room chairs and the tip of a ship disappearing into the ocean. There had been music in the dining hall, and it was music so loud and so good that nobody had noticed the water flooding in over the carpet. The violins went on soaring for some time after the screaming had begun. Sometimes the shriek of a passenger would duet with a high C. The baby was found wrapped for warmth in the musical score of a Beethoven symphony. It had drifted almost a mile from the ship and was the last to be rescued. The man who lifted it into the rescue boat was a fellow passenger and a scholar. It is a scholar's job to notice things. He noticed that it was a girl, with hair the colour of lightning and the smile of a shy person. Think of nighttime with a speaking voice, or think how moonlight might talk, or think of ink if ink had vocal cords. Give those things a narrow, aristocratic face with hooked eyebrows and long arms and legs, and that is what the baby saw as she was lifted out of her cello case and up into safety. His name was Charles Maxim, and he determined, as he held her in his large hands, at arm's length as he would a leaky flower pot, that he would keep her.
Oh my God, that's so good. You had me at baby floating alone on the ocean. And that reminded me, I guess it's like rule number one for a children's book author, or at least a writer of adventure stories. The first thing you have to do is get rid of the parents, right?
Right. So this is the thing that parents impose the imperatives of the adult world. And how can you go on an adventure when your parents are saying, make sure you call me by 5 p.m. and be home for supper?
But I think one reason that that can speak to us at any age is that we often all have the feeling as we move through life of being alone or of finding ourselves sort of adrift or abandoned in the adult world as well as the children's world.
I think it's exactly that. I think we know what it is to feel powerless as adults. When we write about orphans, we write about children who navigate the world in the knowledge of their vulnerability. And I think what you're doing when you write orphans is you're telling adults as well what is left of us when we are stripped away, when we need to start out all over again. That's why so many children's books are about things like fundamental kindness, love, passion, and people who rise to swing for those to whom they are not connected by blood.
Just listening to you talk, I'm thinking about how many children's books are suffused with this, well, you write about it as a hunger for moral justice. You know, I'm thinking about how many classic children's books there are that have somebody evil who's punished, you know, whether it's Captain Hook or Cruella de Vil or Cinderella's stepmother who goes down. There's a sense that the bad people will be punished.
Absolutely. I think a lot of that comes from the germ of children's books, which lies in fairy tales. We want the baddies to go falling through the air and be devoured by their own rage and fury and to be beaten. The idea that we have of fairy tales as a girl in a beautiful dress marrying a prince over and over again, it's entirely recent, really dates to the last 80-100 years. And in the 19th century, Giambattista Basile's version of Cinderella, she marries the prince and she goes back to the wicked stepmother with a trunk full of clothes. And she says, I forgive you. I love you. I've brought you these clothes. And the wicked stepmother leans in to look at the clothes and Cinderella slams down the lid and chops her head off. And, you know, that is often what fairy tales really were. They have this kind of grittiness, a kind of darkness. They have blood in them and they have a completely unabashed acknowledgement of our darkest desire. And I love that about them.
Yeah, isn't there an Icelandic version also where somebody winds up eating somebody else?
Yes. In the Icelandic version, the evil stepmother is an ogress, and she makes her ogress daughter cut off her toes in order to deceive the prince and put on the shoe. And then when he finds out, he kills the ogress daughter, and he makes her into porridge, and he feeds her to the wicked stepmother, which again, for some reason, Disney didn't go with that particular option. Like, we'll never know why.
Yeah, just think what we're all missing. Well, and that's the other thing I think that children's books, the best of them, can do is reconnect us to something primal, the most powerful instincts, hunger and justice and searching and adventure. And I think, you know, that if there's a tragedy of adulthood, it's that we grow up, we become free in the world and powerful in a way that every child dreams of being. And then we discover somehow we live in this world that feels completely flat.
I think exactly that, that children's books can sometimes be the antidote to that, to the sense that it is naive to hunger for justice. Or maybe more importantly, that it's naive to imagine the possibility of a better world. Children's books stand fundamentally against that belief. So for instance, Le Guin, I remember, I'm just looking for this quote, she said, "We live in capitalism. Its power seems inescapable. So did the divine right of kings. Any human power can be resisted and changed by human beings. Resistance and change often begin in art, and very often in our art, the art of words." So she believed that her books might be something that would sow the seeds that are necessary for resistance.
Wow. Now you're painting a picture of children's books as politically subversive also, as having kind of a deep element of anti-establishmentarianism.
I think that's absolutely true. Some of them. It's very important to acknowledge that huge numbers of children's books, especially British children's books, have suggested that the best thing you can be is quiet, white, thin, rich, and profoundly acceptable according to the lights of the day. So they have not always been a tool for rebellion, but it is true that many children's books were also a little bit subversive. They had a surprising politics to them.
Going back to your Roofwalkers book and some of the other adventure stories, You seem like a very adventurous person. I mean, you've been taking trapeze flying lessons.
Oh, that was so much fun. So that would be the best example of doing something that you wouldn't necessarily do otherwise for research and then falling in love with it. So I was writing a book called The Good Thieves, which is a heist set in 1920s New York City with four children, and they all need individual skills. So there's a lockpick and an animal tamer and a boy who is a great trapeze artist. And so I wanted to know what it felt like to fly and to be caught midair. So I took quite a few trapeze lessons. I did land on my face very badly at one point. I went blind in one eye for half a day.
Oh my God.
But I know. It was a little bit dramatic, but it was worth it. It was a delight.
Did you keep on with the lessons after that, or did you say, okay, I know enough?
I kept going. The flying trapeze, I cannot recommend it too highly. You just feel a little bit like you're flying, and you feel so elegant, and then someone shows you a video, and you realize you do not look elegant. You look like a sort of badger on a fishing line, but the idea is still there.
And then I also read that before you wrote The Explorers, the one set in the Amazon, you learned to fly off a small plane.
I was going to do that anyway, because a lot of my family were pilots in the Second World War, and my uncle was a bush pilot. So when I would go back to visit my family in Zimbabwe, I was learning to fly this tiny little yellow two-seater Piper Cub. And I got quite far with that, such that by the end of my lessons, I could take off and I could fly in the middle quite well, and I very, very bad at landing, which is not at all the way around that you want it.
See, reading those things about you, I found that just remarkable and exciting, and it gave me some of the same sense that life can be an adventure that I get from reading children's books. So my theory in my head is that reading children's books is a way to remember what it felt like to be learning things, how that feeling of learning something is connected to the feeling of adventure and the feeling of possibility in the world. And I think as adults, sometimes we forget to learn. You know, we have the feeling that we grew up and we moved through the various stages of education and then graduated into adulthood. And yeah, I think learning reawakens the child in all of us.
I'm so sure you're right. I've never actually thought of it in that specific way. But of course, that makes perfect sense. And also the way they say that the way to make time slow down, if you feel like your life is flashing by in a blur, the best way to make it slow, to grab hold of it again, is to learn something new. And I think there is a great liberation in, as an adult, deciding to learn something even if you're quite rubbish at it at first, because I think as adults, we become used to being quite good at what we do. And I think I have taught myself to be willing to be really bad at something for a long time. And that has been an enormous pleasure. The first time I landed an aeroplane, sort of by myself, I said to my instructor who sits behind you, you know, how did I do? And he said, well, only technically, no one died. I was like, oh, thank you. I'm not really a compliment. But, you know, these things, there is such joy in doing something and discovering it, even if the discovery is slow and painful.
That's Catherine Rundell. She is who I want to be when I grow up or grow young. Her children's books include Rooftoppers, The Good Thieves, The Explorer, and a book-length essay, Why You Should Read Children's Books, Even Though You Are So Old and Wise.